Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I'm Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
The Michigan hockey team lost in the Frozen Four, continuing a recent trend of Michigan teams coming up painfully short of a national championship. The men's basketball roster now includes three transfers. We discussed the latest move. And football added a commitment to its 2024 class. We're talking about that and more coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be talking with you here Wednesday, late morning, April 12th. Seems like a long time ago, and it was almost a week. It was last Thursday that the Michigan hockey team lost to Quinnipiac 5-2 in the Frozen Four. The game was tied at 2 going into the third period, and Michigan was down just 1 for most of that third before a couple of late goals. Ryan, you were there in Tampa. What was the experience like, and why did Michigan come up short?
Well, first off, I'd like to start a petition to have every Frozen Four in a warm climate city from moving forward, because it was I'm not a big hot weather guy, but like, and it was, they were breaking records in Tampa that week. I mean, in the 90s every day, but it's just like walking to the rink in like shorts and a t-shirt, and it was just a great feel, like eating along the water. I mean, just a great host city to have it, and it was very convenient that the hotel was literally right next door to the arena. In the past, the previous two Frozen Fours, I had to, the shuttle service from the hotel to the rink was always a disaster. But here you literally walk outside of the hotel and it's a 3-minute walk into the media, into the rink. And it was just fantastic. But
Hold on a sec. You know, I didn't think about that. And I didn't notice what people were wearing in the arena. You and I, obviously, our body temperatures run very differently. Yeah. But I mean, isn't it still like freezing in there with the ice? I thought it'd be like, it's always cold at hockey arenas, and therefore you'd be like in this weird, you know, where you dress for outside or inside, but no, it's not even that bad inside.
It's funny you mention that, because at the pre-semifinal press conference, a reporter asked one of the players, like, how are we supposed to dress when it's 95 degrees outside and cold in the rink? But I mean, when the arena's full, and okay, in this instance, it was weird. The press box at Amalie Arena is basically like you can touch fans right in front of you. And like, if they're standing up, it's like hard to see the rink. So it's like, you're not really like Little Caesars Arena. It is freezing cold in the press box because you're way up and not around other people. But not at Amalie Arena. So I never was told I wore shorts and a t-shirt to the pregame availabilities, and then a short sleeve dress shirt and jeans to the game, and I was completely fine, didn't get cold at all. So yeah, I mean, it was, some people were complaining that it was cold at ice, or in the kind of the bowels of the arena where the media interviews were pregame and stuff, but it wasn't too bad at all. It was a nice little refreshing feel after walking inside from 90 plus.
Zook runs warm too, so that's important to point out.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly.
That is true. Yeah, but no, I mean, some of the other guys I was with covering the team, they seemed they didn't get too cold either. So no, we survived. It was perfect. I can't wait until Tampa hosts another Frozen Four, or in Vegas in 2026 too. That could be pretty fun.
There you go. All right. So sorry, I kind of, you know, sidetracked you there with that question, but yeah, good. The experience and the game and yeah, Michigan losing.
Yeah, I mean, it was the semifinal games and weren't close, but and Michigan kind of ran into a defensive dynamo in Quinnipiac that I didn't realize also had a good amount of offensive firepower too. I mean, they knew that Michigan was a more talented team, just like in the finals against Minnesota when they beat them in overtime. But they just really stuck to their game plan and did all the little things right. whether it was chipping pucks out, getting pucks deep, getting sticks in lanes, or just being in the right position defensively. And Michigan wasn't able to generate much. And I mean, a lot of people are pointing the finger at Eric Portillo, the goalie, and he did allow a few goals that should have been stopped. The fourth one, especially, but Michigan also gave up probably 9-10 odd man rushes in that game, including a couple of breakaways. They were very leaky defensively, and they didn't, and offensively, they were mostly kept to the outside for much of the game. And even when Michigan tied it up, you're just like, man, you never felt like Michigan was in control of the game, which is rare for this team in the second half of the year. Because even when they were down against Penn State going the third period, they had generated a lot of chances in the first two periods. They seemed to be making a push. That really never came against Quinnipiac. You know, Fantilli had that laser of a one-timer in the second period to tie it. And after that, they had a nice little push and threatened a little bit for that go-ahead goal. But once a Bobcat scored early in the third and on another bank shot from behind the goal line, like, I haven't seen any of those goals all year. And the fact that Quinnipiac scored two off of Portillo's backside in that game was pretty wild. And you just had a feeling that they weren't going to be able to come back against a team that really had only allowed more than three goals one time all season. I mean, they're averaging 1.54 goals against a great defensive core, a dynamite goalie. And yeah, it just, the mission fell short once again against a team that I didn't think would be able to stack up against all the star power from the Minnesotas and the Michigans. And sure enough, they prove everyone wrong and end up winning their first national title.
You nailed it. I watched the full game. It's probably the only Michigan hockey I watched all season long, but it just seemed like Quinnipiac just had way more scoring opportunities. Portillo had some good saves. He made some incredible saves, I thought, and that score could have been probably even more lopsided than it was. But he also gave up some easy ones too. But it just seemed like Quinnipiac just outplayed them on both sides of the rink or the ice, and they were the better team that night, I thought.
Yeah, it's funny because people always play goals that should be stopped. People will always harp on those, and there was three of them that even the first goal, like he made a save, but like he wasn't able to trap the rebound and get back to his post. So it's like kind of a fluky goal. But you got to have more awareness of where the puck is after you save it. And he wasn't able to get back. And that fourth goal there's just no excuse for that. And that once they went up two goals with 7 minutes left, that was kind of the dagger that you knew. But yeah, like Aaron said, there was, I mean, 2-0 that he had to stitch his left pad out to make a left pad save. He stopped the leading scorer on another breakaway. So yeah, I mean, Quinnipiac just came in waves and were able to generate off the rush, which is Michigan is used to doing, but they weren't able to do that on Thursday. And their top guys for a second straight year were kind of just held, were quiet in on the biggest stage. I mean, Luke Hughes had a rough game. The Fantilli line, which has been dynamic since they were put together late in the year, they were hemmed in their own zone more than I had seen throughout the second half of the year, which was very surprising. They're typically controlling play in the offensive zone, and they didn't really generate much with their secondary lines as well. So it was kind of an off game for Michigan and another missed opportunity in a national semifinal.
Exactly. As I referenced in the introduction, this is now a trend, and I can kind of take you through this list here, and Michigan fans might want to just, I don't know, fast forward a couple minutes here, but hockey lost in last year's Frozen Four. Also, the football team at Michigan has lost in the semifinals each of the past 2 years. In 2018, the men's basketball and baseball teams reached the national championship, but lost. And that same year, the hockey team lost in the Frozen Four. That's seven teams in the last 5 years reaching at least the national semifinals, zero national championships. I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that the school does have a national championship in that time frame. The women's gymnastics team won it all in 2021. And if you want to go back a little further, men's gymnastics has a few as well, has a couple of 2014, 2013. They won. Men's swimming and diving won in 2013. That same year, of course, the men's basketball team got to the national championship and lost. So, some of the higher profile sports, especially, not getting it done. I don't know. It seems hard to tie any sort of thread, among all these different teams and in different sports, but it's not a good trend. The national championship is the ultimate prize, right? And Michigan doesn't have any in those sports, at least, you know, for the last several years, despite getting there.
Yeah,
any ideas why?
It's really funny because it's a lot of times Michigan has been the favorite in the semifinal game too. I mean, they were the favorite against Quinnipiac, at least a betting favorite. I looked, they were like -160 on the money line heading into that game. Last year against Denver, the eventual national champion, they were the number one overall seed, loaded with 7 NHL first-round draft picks. I mean, that if there was a team that was destined to win a national championship, it was last season, and they kind of ran in. They didn't play well in the semifinal and were beat in overtime in that game too. And they were definitely the favorite there. I covered the 2018 team. That was kind of more of a surprise that they even reached. They did not have the draft picks like they did in the past 2 years. They kind of went on a late season run to even reach the Frozen Four before losing to Notre Dame in crushing fashion too in the last, I think, last minute or just over a minute left. So it was a crushing defeat, and Notre Dame went on to lose in the national championship to Minnesota Duluth that year. So as far as hockey goes, they've had the teams to do it. They've been the favorite to do it. And for whatever it is, I mean, Norada was asked this after the game, like what's the deal? Cause he was also on the Frozen Four team in 2008 that lost by one goal in overtime too. And it's just like, hey, you know what? It's one game this time of year, like all the teams are good. And sometimes a bounce doesn't go your way, but the fact that the hockey program is 1-7 in the semis since 1998, their last national championship, is pretty crazy. And I'll let Aaron speak to the football side, but they were definitely the favorite this year against DCU as well.
Yeah, and football is obviously part of it. They lost the last 2 years now in the college football playoff semifinal. 1 year where they were a heavy underdog, this year they were a heavy favorite. So, you know, they obviously have contributed. I'm not a big fan of, you know, tying a string to all this stuff. I mean, right. These are separate events and separate years and separate teams and separate sports. And Zook, you brought up a good point. In college athletics, at least most sports, not to this point, it's one game elimination. This isn't a best of three, best of five, best of seven series where in theory the best team wins. And that's maybe the knock against, you know, some of these other professional leagues like the NBA, where it almost seems like almost always the top seeds win. Well, it's because you're playing out a series of games, and it's not just one game elimination where one bad night can kill you. So it's obviously a concern. You can criticize and everything else, but at the end of the day, I mean, these are different sports and different teams and different years and different opponents. So it's hard to, you know, to lop it all together. Nonetheless, I mean, football has gotten there the last 2 years. They haven't been able to get past, you know, the semifinal. That's obviously a storyline going into this season, and it's one the players and coaches have openly discussed. Their goal this year is to win a national championship. Now, that maybe hasn't been the case in years past. While they've said it was, I think they legitimately mean it this year, and they've been on that stage. They know what it takes. In some cases, and again, you'd have to go on a case-by-case basis, maybe it is the stage is too big for some of these teams, whether they're young or inexperienced or haven't been there in a long time or whatever the case may be. You can make that case a couple of years ago with Michigan in the Orange Bowl. So it's hard to draw a thread, commonality between all this stuff. Yes, they've gotten there. College athletics is tough. I mean, we talk about all the time, the NCAA tournament basketball, like you got to win in every game to get there. It's not like it's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's a lot harder than it probably looks like on paper.
Most programs, you know, most schools would gladly sign up for this, almost every single one. We're talking about these failures, not to get, you know, there's not a Final Four drought, a Frozen Four drought, a playoff drought for the football team. They're getting there. You know, only one team can win it all, and Michigan just hasn't been that team. It's just, I guess it's surprising, really, when you look at, if I just told you that here's a list of teams that made it at least this far, you would think just the odds are at least one of them, you know, win and won it all, whether they were, you know, a favorite underdog or whatever. Like, it's just interesting that, I mean, that's always the goal. I mean, you know, I've heard the coaches say it at Michigan, you know, you just want to get to that Monday night in April, you know, where you're, you know, you're coaching and playing for a national championship. You know, in Michigan, the men at least have done that. Now that 2018 team that falls in this, you know, recent 5-year stretch played a Villanova team that was just, simply better. I mean, that was, you know, they even if that was a series, Michigan would have lost that game probably, you know, 9 times out of 10. So, you know, that Villanova team was just loaded and, you know, better. They ripped through that tournament. So, yeah, it's, you know, I think it's just interesting more so than like, okay, here's something that just hasn't gone right. Cause, you know, again, like Aaron said, these are just different teams and different sports. You know, it's there's no real way to, there's no trend here necessarily, but it's
Aaron's experience point kind of is intriguing though, because as far as this hockey team is concerned, this year I wrote about a lot how, I mean, it was the youngest team in college hockey against a team in Quinnipiac that had a bunch of seniors, fifth year guys, experienced older veterans that, I mean, yeah, they might not have played in the big stage before in the Frozen Four stage, but I mean, they didn't fold under any circumstances. Michigan kind of, I think, started chasing the game a little bit when they fell behind 1-0 and gave up a lot of uncharacteristic, like, man rushes or forcing plays. And that just didn't happen from the more experienced team. And just like in the national championship against Minnesota, I mean, that was one of the most fun hockey games I've watched in quite some time. I mean, Quinnipiac fell behind 2-0 against a Minnesota team that had been number one for most of the season, also loaded with NHL draft picks, and Quinnipiac kind of found their way back, made a huge push in the third period to tie it and won it in overtime. So I think experience in some instances definitely helps, but yeah, it's funny that, I mean, Michigan has had some experienced teams too that have gone far in the past 20 plus years, and they also fall short. So interesting discussion, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's as long as they keep making it back there and until they get over that hump, it's going to be a storyline.
All right, let's transition a little bit here. Men's basketball team, a lot of roster movement lately. I'm trying to think, since our last podcast, I guess they've added two. They have three transfers joining the team for next season. In addition to Namari Burnett that we already talked about, they got Trey Jackson, a power forward from Seton Hall, and Caleb Love, a guard from North Carolina. Yeah, Jackson, you know, kind of fills a position of need. They felt they certainly needed to do better next season at that spot than they did last season. You know, his stats aren't eye popping by any means. He wasn't, you know, necessarily the first or second option offensively for that team. 15 of 40 from three, that's 38%. You know, and good shooting inside the arc as well, and kind of, you know, an athletic kid from Detroit. So he's, you know, he's coming back home in a sense. And then Caleb Love is, you know, a name a lot of people know. I mean, if you watch, you know, the NCAA tournament, you know, 2 years ago, he was a big reason why North Carolina, you know, made that run to the national championship. Just some huge games throughout the tournament and some, you know, some big shots, a lot of, you know, long range threes that, you know, in key spots that, you know, helped North Carolina make that run. You know, this year, the shooting percentages went down, and he's never been a super high percentage guy. He's a, you know, he's a kind of high volume scorer. But, you know, still there's a lot of that was maybe because a lot was asked of him, you know what I mean? Like shot clock winding down, ball in his hands. All right, go get us a basket. And he often did. So still a guy, you know, Hunter Dickinson was number one on these portal lists, you know, when he went in, and Caleb Love, you know, was, you know, right up there as well, you know, maybe number two, or some might have even said he was better, or at least, you know, the best guard available. So yeah, this is a very talented kid, you know, top 15 kid in his recruiting class. And you know, he's had 3 years in North Carolina, and now he's coming to Michigan. So the thought is that he can play alongside Doug McDaniel. But you know, also play point guard, be a ball handler at times too. So this was a important get, I think, for a Michigan team that needed to replace, you know, Kobe Bufkin and Jed Howard.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you think the new guys coming in can fully replicate or maybe make up for the production loss when these guys are leaving? I mean, is this kind of I guess it's hard to compare because they're different, obviously different players and different styles and everything else, but can they replace the production loss from a Hunter Dickinson and a, you know, the Kobe Bufkin, these guys that are leaving?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be different. It's kind of hard to think about replacing just all that, you know, scoring, the top three scorers, and you know, everything else that Dickinson especially did for them. But I don't know, they might not be done yet, right? I mean, they still have, you know, from my count, one roster scholarship spot open. Now, that's not counting Jalen Llewellyn, who, you know, supposedly wants to come back and Michigan would want him. So he would take spot number 13. But, you know, there's obviously things can still change. Someone else can enter the portal. You know, freshmen haven't, you know, enrolled yet. You know, Jace Howard's always kind of a wild card as the coach's son, you know, potentially moving to, you know,
a walk-on status.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's options there potentially to, you know, get that, you know, free up a scholarship if need be. So we'll see how that works. Because it seems like they're still at least, you know, contacting players who are in the portal. They're continue every day. There seems to be another, you know, big name. And often, you know, McDonald's All-Americans or five-star recruits or both that Michigan was, you know, a finalist for, or at least, you know, pursued out of high school that, you know, they missed out on the first time and now they're getting a second crack at them. And, you know, we'll see if they can, you know, land them this time around. So, yeah, interesting time as, you know, the roster continues to take shape.
I mean, if anything, it's going to be good for ticket sales and storylines heading into next year. Cause I feel like, I mean, yeah, like Caleb Love is one of the guys in college basketball that I have known about since that run they made on, and he kind of stood out and almost carried that team up for a little bit there. So it's like, oh, I saw that. I'm like, hey, this is big time. Like, I mean, I know he didn't play as well as maybe, I mean, wasn't he expected to be a potential early NBA lead, potentially early for the NBA? I mean, wasn't he being talked about in draft circles after a couple of good years there?
He was, yes. I mean, and then, I mean, again, there, North Carolina, you talk about, you know, Michigan's disappointment with what happened last year. I mean, it was, it almost paled in comparison to North Carolina, you know, preseason number one, and they don't even, you know, make the tournament. And yeah, you know, Love was not the sole reason for that. They just had a lot of issues going on, but yes, his stock certainly, you know, dipped a little bit, but he's got that, you know, that kind of talent, that kind of, you know, offensive ability. So, yeah, it's an exciting player to add. And you feel like Michigan probably has to swing big given, you know, who they lost. So it's just, you know, in the past, Michigan, you know, you lose who you lose, and it's like immediately you have to say it's a rebuilding year, but you know, it's just not the case anymore in college sports. You can try to, you know, retool your roster immediately on the fly and upgrade, and, you know, not wait for, you know, freshmen necessarily to develop into upperclassmen. You can try to just grab those proven college players right away. So that's what Michigan has done. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how it works out. On the women's side, Leah Brown, I should mention, drafted into the WNBA by the Atlanta Dream, second round, number 15 overall, if that sounds familiar, because it's exactly where Naz Hillman went last year at that spot to the same team. So yeah, we'll see if she makes the roster. Naz Hillman, you know, did, you know, was a contributor for, you know, a team that did not make the playoffs, but is kind of, you know, definitely rebuilding. You know, we'll see if Leah Brown can. It's just it's tough. You know, there's just not that many spots in the WNBA. So yeah, to add someone that's not, you know, clearly a, you know, top prospect, you know, we'll see how it works out for her. Hoping to, you know, talk to her later this week to kind of get a feel for, you know, what she thinks of this spot. And yeah, but you know, a good thing for a Michigan women's basketball program that, you know, had gone a while without sending anyone to the league. Now, you know, 2 years in a row. The football team added a commitment, a massive offensive lineman. Yes.
Yes. 6'8", almost 300 pounds. And another highly ranked guy, another top 200 guy, as Michigan keeps plugging away on the recruiting trail. And it's been quite the flipping the script here in the 2024 class compared to 2023. I mean, now the third ranked class in the country. And I know it's still April, still early, but considering where they were last season, it's definitely good news. I mean, all or nine of them are ranked in the top 500. one, two, three, four, five, six, seven are ranked as 4-star guys. So they're restocking the cupboards with some talent here. And I mean, getting a tackle at 6'8", 290 pounds, this Andrew Sprague out of Rockhurst High in Kansas City, Missouri, pretty massive get for the Wolverines as Michigan and Sherrone Moore kind of beef up the offensive line. Because, I mean, yeah, right now this year they're loaded there, but once some of these guys start graduating or leaving for the NFL, they're going to need to replace quite a few pieces here in the near future. And guys like Sprague will be pushing for an opportunity.
I think he's obviously seen the success Michigan's had with the offensive line. And it's interesting because we like to talk about NIL now and everything else that typically affects the bigger, you know, skill positions like quarterback and receiver, running back, et cetera. Offensive linemen don't see that as much. So I don't think Michigan's necessarily battling NIL with a lot of these offensive linemen. This is a position I think they can recruit. They know they can recruit really well. And they've obviously had success with the offense and just their style of play. So he fits. I mean, the Kansas City kid, Michigan's certainly gone into that area now the last few years. That's where Ronnie Bell, they found Ronnie Bell. So it's obviously a good fit. They continue to recruit well that position. And, you know, given the results on the field, it's kind of to be expected at this point.
Yeah, it was really surprising last cycle after that Joe Moore Award where they didn't really ink any top offensive linemen. It's like, that's kind of surprising given the success of that unit last year. But then now after back-to-back years, I think maybe Sherrone's like they have more of a feather in their cap when they're on the recruiting trail. So and they're not done at the offensive line position right now either. They have two tackles and an interior guy already committed, but don't be surprised if they add another highly ranked guy or two moving forward.
All right, recruiting continues to maintain some of its momentum that we've talked about in previous episodes. What else do we got? Anything else for this episode? I mean, I know the Big Ten new commissioner for the league. I don't know. Has that been announced or it's just not official yet? But.
Yeah, not official report. I think announcement is coming later today or tomorrow. Okay. So by the time folks hear this, it will be announced. Several high level reports, ESPN, The Athletic, New York Times, et cetera, Yahoo. They're reporting that former MLB and CBS Sports executive Tony Petitti is going to be the league's next commissioner. Former lawyer, as I mentioned, he helped kind of spearhead MLB Network. He was CEO, COO of Major League Baseball for a long time when Rob Manfred became commissioner. He recently worked for Activision Blizzard, the video game company. So a lot of experience. He helped launch CBS Sports Network. So again, he kind of checks all the boxes nowadays for leagues. I mean, they want a guy who's obviously up to date with TV and how that works and then he's obviously a lawyer, so that helps. And he's got lots of experience in sports. So in a time where college athletics is all over the place, a lot of expansion going on, a lot of stuff flying around, this seems to be the obvious safe choice. I don't know who the other candidates were. Maybe we'll find out at some point. But either way, the Big Ten had to make a move quickly. Kevin Warren had obviously announced over the summer that he was out. I think he's taking over as CEO and president of the Chicago Bears on Monday. So they had to move quickly here. He's going to be the new commissioner. I think he's going to take over probably the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a quick transition. We'll see what ends up happening. Obviously Kevin Warren had a mixed, tenure, I guess, between COVID shutdowns and football and everything else. But he had some great things he did too. I mean, he helped negotiate a new TV contract for the Big Ten, big one, lucrative one, $7 billion over 7 years, and obviously helped negotiate the introduction or, you know, the arrival of UCLA and USC. So did some great things. He did some questionable things. Nonetheless, he's out the door in the Big Ten as a new commissioner coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to get a guy with, like, the TV experience, right? Like, that's what the job is, or at least, I mean, you wear a lot of hats, I guess, but that's the most important one is, you know, that's where the money is now. So it's like, that's the background you want maybe more than anything. All right. Well, a lot covered here on this episode of Wolverine Confidential, and we'll have continued coverage on mlive.com/Wolverines of all things, University of Michigan Athletics.